Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hello, Blues. Welcome to another special edition of the Toffee Web podcast. From time to time, we invite prominent guests from the world of Evertonia. And on this episode, Paul Traill and I are delighted to have on Paul McManies, a.k.a. Pablo, a.k.a. Squatter. Paul Pablo is, as I'm sure most of all of our listeners are aware, a member of the Everton Fan Advisory Board. And depending on your vintage and which parts of the online Toffees community you've frequented down the years, you probably knew of him long before then. Pablo, first of all, thanks for coming on and a warm welcome to the Toffee Web podcast.
Thank you very much, mate. I don't know about prominent too much, but it's mad to finally be meeting you after 25, 30 years of just chatting online and emails backwards and forwards and being a part of the, when the People's Forum was officially part of Toffee Web all those years ago. So, good to be on. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I would imagine that we probably met on the old ToffeeNet mailing list, which is still alive, believe it or not, even if no one posts on it anymore. And obviously, as you see, you've had a long time of association with the People's Forum. You were an admin over there at one point, weren't you?
I was, yeah, for quite a few years, actually. Myself and Colm from Ireland, we were running that for a little while. And then it was probably a couple of years ago. It was probably about 15 years ago that I handed over the reins to someone else because, you know, time just goes away, doesn't it? But yeah, that's been my little corner of the internet. And I haven't really, you know, ventured out much. And then I joined the Fab and all of a sudden I'm sort of leading the comms subcommittee in the Fab and I need to sort of look out there. And it's like, oh my God, there are an awful lot of Everton groups out there nowadays. And I have to sort of try and acquaint myself with all of them. But it's good to see a familiar face with Toffee Web, definitely.
Absolutely. Well, we wanted to get you on to talk about the Fan Advisory Board, of course, which we'll do in a bit. But why don't you give us your Everton origin story? How did you become a Blue? Where, when, how did it start for you?
My mum and my dad were season ticket holders before I was born. I was on the Gladys Street when my mum was pregnant. So born in Liverpool, born on Smith Down Road, about 4 years from four miles from Goodison. Try that. which is now an Asda, apparently. The women's hospital that used to be there is now an Asda supermarket. So just brought up with it through my dad, really. First match when I was eight. So it was the day after my eighth birthday. We went and watched us beat Coventry 3-0. That was February 1981. Just through the family, really. And I grew up, moved shortly after being born to North Wales, where my mum's from. Grew up one of the very few Evertonians, I would say. It was all Liverpool and Man United in the 80s. So until we started winning things, and then all of a sudden they started coming out the woodwork, funnily enough. That's where it started. And that's, and this is where it's ended on the bloody fan advisory board. Unbelievable.
the long journey.
Great that you actually managed to catch a win on the first your first ever game. Nearly every Evertonian speaker says we lost the first game I went to or something like that. I know my first one we were two up against Bolton Wanderers in the FA Cup. Stuart Barlow had scored twice, and then we still managed to lose 3-2 in extra time. So I was hooked after that.
Yeah, like, yeah. So that's the usual one, isn't it? No, it was it was 3-0, and my son, who is now 21, when we took him when he was like 6 and a half, his first game was 3-0. So then when we asked my dad what the first game he could remember was, and he said he'd been a couple of times, but the first time he got his season ticket was 1964, the year after they won the league. So we looked it up, and of course his first game was a 3-0 as well. So that was quite cool. Three generations of 3-0 debuts-ish, because as I say, he said he'd been to the odd game here or there, but you can't remember which one. The first one he can remember he was definitely at was 3-0 as well, so we'll have it.
Yeah, that's definitely a good start. I took my two girls to the Brighton home game last year, and that was probably the worst game I've ever been to. So I'm going to struggle to drag them back, I think.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? I mean, the flip side of that, I was actually closer to you for the Brighton away game last year, because I was in New York with my son, and we went to the Turnmill in New York, and we watched the Brighton away game, which we won 5-1, and we were like, you know, up within a minute, and then we got the one in the last minute, and that. So yeah, we definitely, that was like the first day of our holiday. We got there on the Sunday night, and then that was on the Monday. So that's probably my Everton highlight for this year, put it that way.
That's a good way to start any trip, I would say.
Yeah, it was.
Well, we know that the Fab, of course, shared in the outrage at the decision by the Independent Commission and the Premier League to deduct Everton 10 points. Dave Kelly, who's the Fan Advisory Board Chair this year, very publicly, very eloquently got the message out to the wider world. But how fantastic has the response been from the fans, the manager and the players since? I mean, in four games, we've made up 9 of those 10 lost points. We're 4 points above the drop zone. It's been magnificent, isn't it?
It has, and I say we had the supporters meeting the few days after the Premier League judgment came out, because obviously they did it in the middle of the international break, which they were thinking would mean that we wouldn't actually do anything about it, and of course they don't really know Evertonians very well, so we had a supporters meeting that week, and it felt great to be standing up there. Talking to people who were a united fan base. That's the biggest thing that's come out of this, is that the fan base is united by this, because we've had so much division over the last few years. We had divisions over the chairman, over the team, there's been so much division in the fan base, and a lot of that's been deliberate. I think a lot of the time, obviously, the club hasn't been run in the way that a lot of us would have wanted. I mean, none of us on the fan advisory board joined the Fab because we thought the club was being well run, and to pat them on the back, you know. So so I think it's it was really nice to see the togetherness with that, and it really has united us. I think on the pitch we were definitely heading in the right direction anyway. I think that needs to be said. I think that, you know, Sean Dyche has clearly got a united dressing room there as well. But I think obviously with the outrage over this and the the feeling of how unfair this judgment actually is and how harsh it is, I think that's really united everyone. And that's for the longest time that I can remember, we do have a united fan base about something, even if it's not over who starts at right back.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think we'll get any of those 10 points back?
I am with my non-Fab head on, with my Pablo the Fan, I'm a bit reluctant to. I'm not sure we will. I think that there's been a lot of noise about the, to use a Dyche-ism, which everyone started saying, a lot of noise, which Dyche says all the time. There's been a lot of noise about, this was that and this was said and that was that. And I think that we've moved away from a fair bit that, we have done wrong. The club has done wrong. I think it is disproportionate, but I'm not too sure that the Premier League are actually going to back down on it. I'd like to think they would. But my concern then would be that, are they going to say, oh, okay, well, you can have 4 of these back, and then next season they're going to say, oh, well, actually, oh, look at your accounts again. And I don't know whether the tack might actually be better to actually sort of like, just start negotiating with them, just sort of saying, well, listen, right, we'll take the 10 points, because we, the 10 points I would like to think is not going to affect our league position. Hopefully we should cope with that, given this, the rest of the league and where we're at the moment. So it's one of them where my main concern, I think, going forwards is not that we don't get any of the 10 points back. It's, is there further stuff coming along the line, and are we going to get stung again? Because if we were non-compliant, whatever it was, 3 seasons ago, then what about 2 seasons ago? What about 1 season ago? Because the same people were there, presumably making the same mistakes. So that would be my biggest worry, I think.
Do you think that's likely that we'll have further punishment down the line?
I've got no idea. I mean, I genuinely just looking at it from the point of view of the fact that, you know, Grant Ingalls was in charge of the finance right the way through all of that. If mistakes were made, then you would assume that the same mistakes were made consistently, because they would be doing the same sort of things. And you've got to remember as well, and again, it's difficult. Being on the Fab's a sort of a difficult position, because we do have a good relationship with the club, but we are independent, and so we have to challenge the club. But we also have to sort of keep them a little bit on side as well, in that we don't want to fall out with them, because we do have a genuinely good relationship. I genuinely believe that the people that we meet with and that we talk to and that sit around that table do genuinely believe in the fan advisory board and the idea of it, and that they do want that relationship to work. So, but it has to be said that, obviously, you know, that there have been mistakes made at the club. It's been very obvious that the club haven't really wanted to have any close scrutiny on that. They've stopped AGMs, they've stopped EGMs. There's been no real sort of fan engagement. So I think that would be where my concern would be. And also, again, my own personal worry about this is one of the main reasons I joined the Fab is because I thought, oh, look, the board members have gone in the summer. That shows that fans can actually have a say. All of these marches and everything have actually had an effect. Now I'm starting to think, is that the case? Is it the case that actually the directors that went were actually like, well, hang on a minute, this hearing's coming up. We're getting out, thanks. It might be that, you know what I mean? And that's the bit that I must admit, I am, the reason I'm on the fan advisory board is I've been moaning about Everton for 25 years and I wanted to put my money where my mouth was finally. So I've always been very, very cynical when it comes to Everton. And I've always been very, very concerned back from when I used to go to AGMs and EGMs in the early 2000s, when we had Chris Samuelson and we had, you know, all sorts of wool being pulled over our eyes, left, right and centre. So, as I say, it's different when you're sat in a boardroom with them, having a meeting with them, as we did a couple of weeks ago, and you're actually looking the people in the eyes that are actually running the club. You do tend to realise those people are actually trying their best to do what they're doing. But you have to say that the club has not been well run over the last few years. So that's my concern, really. So I've got no inside knowledge on that as to whether we are going to get done or anything. It's just a worry of mine that, obviously, if those people were running the show 3 years ago and 2 years ago and 1 year ago, you know, what else is coming, you know?
Were you as shocked as all with the 10 points, though?
I was, absolutely. I mean, I'm as shocked as anything, because the club had told us exactly the same as what they told everyone else, which was that they were not expecting to get any punishment whatsoever. The club went in there believing that they were about 17 million under the threshold. So, you know, they thought they were way, way under it. So when we had our meeting with them in August, that was one of the questions we asked. We had it on the agenda. Sure, we knew they wouldn't be able to answer much about it, but is there anything more that you can tell us about that thing, the hearing and how it's going? Is there any progress in it? And they just said, all we can reiterate is what we said in the statement. We don't believe that we've done anything wrong. We've worked with the Premier League on this. And I do genuinely believe that that was a shock to the club when that came out, to the club as well. We had a meeting with the club that same day. I think it came out about 11 a.m. And we had a meeting with the club for 2 hours at 4 o'clock, where they, you know, briefed us on what happened and their analysis of it at the time, which was literally that, you know, what we've seen from the judgment. Obviously, there's a 41-page document that they hadn't quite read all of yet, but the headlines were that it did seem disproportionate, and that's the main thing that they're going to be going into the appeal with.
Yes, being cynical kind of comes with the territory for being an Evertonian, I suppose.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I'm a positive person in all of the walks of life, except when it comes to Everton, to be honest. And even then, you know, I say that Brighton game, I still remember where, you know, we're in New York, we're 4-1 up, and then we score the fifth goal in the last minute, and a Scouser that was also in there watching it turn around and went, I reckon we might be all right now. And that's it. You don't ever stop. And to be honest, speaking more generally, that's kind of the way that it's been on the, you know, you don't really necessarily enjoy games anymore. It's a relief when we win. There's not that sort of ecstasy of the enjoyment of it, because it's been such, you know, two seasons just avoided relegation. Now we've got these 10 points off again. So as much as, you know, it was brilliant at the Newcastle game and it's brilliant at Chelsea, it's still kind of it's still that relief more than the excitement, because we're not going to win anything anytime soon. It's basically the feeling, isn't it?
That's it. And like nearly all the wins are 1-0, aren't they? But the last couple, at least you've been able to enjoy, you know, because we scored, like, to make it 3-0, to make it 2-0 late in the game, you knew that was it.
A little bit of breathing space, but again, even with Newcastle, you know, a couple of seasons ago, 2-0 up, 94th minute, and we end up drawing 2-1. Yeah. You know, you can never count your chickens when it comes to Everton. Just wait till that final whistle. It's like VAR, you don't want to celebrate until you know you can definitely celebrate, you know?
Yeah. That Newcastle game is definitely running through my head at 2-0 up against the Barcos.
Yeah, exactly. It has to. You know, we've had so many of those over the years. It's that, you know, Everton that's a saying purely because of that, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I mean, let's get into the fan advisory board specifically. And I think, you know, some of the things that you mentioned there about things that have made Evertonians skeptical that date all the way back to, as you said, those AGMs early in the 2000s and the various sort of phantom takeover stories from various Russian, you know, paper magnates and all the rest of it through that period. You go through Destination Kirby, right up to the cancelling of the AGMs. There's plenty of sort of fodder there to be as a fan skeptic of the hierarchy as it's been for the last 10, 20 years. And so I think from that perspective, the creation of the FAB, I think, is definitely a step forward, you know, a step towards engagement. And then we can talk about, you know, and you can sort of maybe give your perspective on just how much power you think that the FAB actually has. But there's always a lot of skepticism from fans in some quarters, some often very vocal quarters, about supporters groups and elected supporters groups in particular interfacing with the club. You know, the accusation is always that you're either a club stooge or, you know, you're elected, even if you're elected by fellow fans, that you're just a sop by the club's hierarchy to make it look like they're listening to the fans. So for anyone who doesn't know what it is, can you explain what the FAB is, what its aims are, and then what was your motivation for putting yourself up for election to the FAB? Because I'm sure it hasn't made your life easier.
Yeah, we'll come to that, definitely. So the fan advisory board is basically every Premier League team now has to have a fan advisory board. It's part of the Premier League's fan engagement standard, which is pretty much their attempt to kind of stave off an independent regulator to be able to say, hey, look, we're doing this, this, and this. So the fan engagement standard came up from the Premier League, and they said, this is what we want you all to do. And then all of the Premier League clubs have had to come up with a fan advisory board. So all of them are supposed to have one. They were all supposed to have one at the beginning of this season. Everton and Liverpool were actually the leading lights. We started ours like 18 months ago, and we were the first ones to get up and going. And the makeup since then is they're quite different. So the Everton Fan Advisory Board is independent. It is entirely independent, and the club do not. So put it this way: if the club had a say in it, then Dave Kelly wouldn't be on it because Dave Kelly's probably been on every blacklist that's been on the football club for years. So Dave wouldn't be on it. And that was one of my main reasons for thinking this must be legit if Dave's on it. So the ours is independent. Others, like for example, I think Man United's, they've actually got some club employees on their fan advisory board, which seems odd to me. And so there's a wide range, and it's a broad church that you can actually to implement what a fan advisory board is. I think the Premier League have tried to make it as vague as possible. So as recently as this week, we've found out that a lot of the other Premier League clubs have not really got going with theirs at all. Some of them have been in contact with us. Brighton contacted me probably about a month ago now, just for some advice on bits and bobs and stuff like that. So we're looking at trying to help the other FABs as well, because it's that sort of, you know, rising tide raises all ships, that sort of idea. When I considered joining it in the summer, I was very sceptical about it. which is why I'm, which is why I think I'm quite a good candidate to sort of speak about it. I wasn't sure if it was just lip service. I wasn't sure if it was just the Premier League literally trying to stave off the independent regulator by saying, look, look, look what we're doing. We are listening to the fans after all. Now, the whether that is true or not doesn't really matter to me as much as the fact that it is actually happening. So it's actually happening. So they've let us in. Let's make the most of it, you know? So whether they are actually listening to us or not, whether they are actually, you know, taking on board what we're saying and things like that, I'm talking about, you know, the Premier League and Everton here, it might be that they're, you know, they're just saying it as yes, it's, it might be a tick box exercise for them. We don't know that yet. My impression of it from Everton's point of view is that I don't think it is. I think that they genuinely do see the value in it, and that they do actually want to engage with it. I think we are a pain in the arse to them at times, definitely. We challenge them as best we can. But I can completely understand why fans would see it as being, you know, and that was one of the biggest things I wanted to change, was that perception of, well, they're just in the club's pocket and they are just spokespeople for the club. The key thing that I always try to tell people about the FAB is that just that phrase, the Fan Advisory Board, just gives it a kind of a black box sort of thing. And what you've got to remember is in that black box are 11 Everton supporters, just like you and me. We are just Everton supporters. We've got no divine right to be on there. We've got no, you know, specific qualifications for, I certainly haven't, for what we're doing. You know, Dave Kelly's got a background in fan activism from the Blue Union. Tony Sampson, our vice chair, has been involved in the fans forum before and various sort of things. I'm completely fresh into this. I've never been in anything like this before in my life. So we are just 11 fans trying to do our best, trying to use some of our spare time to make a better Everton, you know, and that's what I think I wanted to get across when I first came in, was to change that perception of the black box element. Our former chairman, Jazz, because he did a few media bits and bobs last year and he was the main spokesperson for it. Well, like when I joined and I became the lead on the comms subcommittee, I went into got access to the FAB Twitter, and I'm looking in there, and a lot of the DMs are saying, hi, Jazz, hi, Jazz, hi, Jazz. They're sent to the Fan Advisory Board, but it's all hi, Jazz, hi, Jazz, hi. So I wanted to change that perception of it just being Jazz and some other people as to being, there are 11 of us here, and we've all got our own independent voices and views, and we don't all agree on everything because we're 11 Evertonians. If you sat at a pub with 11 Evertonians, all going to agree. And that's the way that I think people need to see it, is that we're just 11 Evertonians that are trying to help and trying to make things better. We're not, you know, there's no freebies, there's no favours involved in it. It's literally in our constitution that we cannot accept any favours or anything like that from the club. There's none of that whatsoever. Believe me, there is none of that. There is there's not even thanks a lot of the time from anyone. So it's very much a kind of a it's a thankless task, but I think it's an important one. And what we're trying to do at the moment is, because we're only 18 months in and it's a, you know, real fledgling organization still, because of everything that's happened at Everton over the last 18 months with that, you know, we've had all the headlock gate, we've had, you know, the chairman passing away, we've had MSP, then 777, we had the 10-point deduction, our chairman, Jazz, ended up resigning because there was just too much workload with it and stuff like that. We've had so many of these things to cope with. We're trying to build an organisation. So we're trying to make internal improvements as to how we work as a FAB and lay these foundations for people that are going to come after us, you know, because the fan, you know, people can apply every summer and it moves around. So there's been a lot of challenges that we've faced with that. And a lot of people don't see all of that. They just see, oh, the FAB meets once a month and they meet the club every 3 months for biscuits. And that's not the case. There's a lot of work involved in it, you know?
Yeah.
Do you think you've changed that perception then, as you said, like that, you know?
You tell me.
Perception of you
tell me.
A little bit.
You tell me from your perception, do you think anything's changed this season?
I feel that it feels like there's a little bit less sort of abuse, for want of a you know, better term, thrown your way. It feels like, just on the looking from the outside, from social media, than perhaps there was. Maybe it just feels like the people perhaps a bit more on board. But you know, just just from my observations, but obviously I didn't see enough. You know, it just feels. I think everything that's gone on, I think it's certainly, in my opinion, helps Evertonians to have a voice who's communicating with the club on a regular basis, because there's so much going on right now, and there has been for a long time. And you know, it seems like a bit more of a balanced viewpoint, I suppose. Or at least that's a perception I feel people have. That would be my opinion.
Yeah, well, we are getting less abuse. I mean, Dave said in our meeting last week, you know, I haven't been called a chocolate fire guard for a month, so that's got to be a plus, hasn't it? But I have to say, I mean, when I went through some of the Twitters, you know, we were literally getting people, Evertonians, you know, you look on the profile, they're an Evertonian, yeah, mm-hmm. and they'd literally just send like a DM to the fan advisory board to say, "Give it up, you effing amateurs." Just, and that's it. That's their opening salvo. There's no kind of thing like that. And you know, I'm reading through that was sent 6 months ago. And you almost want to reply back to it and say, well, yeah, we are amateurs. That's the whole point. We're not, you know, what do you think we are here? You know, we're just trying to do it. And the analogy that I've used since I've been in there is what you've got to remember is with Everton, it's an absolute circus. So we are literally looking at a burning building with a water pistol. And we've got to decide where we point that water pistol as a fab, because there's 11 of us, and we've all got, you know, most of us have got jobs. We've all got other commitments. It's not a full-time job. It is literally us doing it in our spare time and doing what we can when we can, and trying to make the best of it. And when there's so much going on, like all those things I just rattled off, it's really sometimes, you know, really, really stressful and really difficult to actually. And when you know that your every word is going to be analysed, and anything that you put out wrong, as I put out most of the press stuff now, most of the tweets and the statements on the website and stuff like that, all come from me. Tony Sampson helps a lot out with the actual wording of the statements and things like that, but we batter that around between us. But you are constantly second guessing all your time to just say, we can't say that, because we know that there are the naysayers out there, and you're trying to. Like, you're trying to equalize before they score is the way I always say, you know, you're trying to take that ammunition away, because you know that there are going to be the naysayers out there. They have quietened down an awful lot. It doesn't mean that they believe in us anymore. But I say, when I first came in, and my pitch, when I actually said, you know, we had to record a 1 minute video to apply for the fab and stuff like that, and that was mine to try to change that perception, because I didn't think it was a fair perception of what the fab actually is, and hopefully we're getting there with it. We'll still get, you know, the odd bit of abuse here and there, but it is very few and far between now, and I think people are starting to see that there is some value in it, and that we're not the stooges that we were kind of. I mean, I can say that now. As I say, when I joined 6 months ago, I was 50-50. I only got elected for a year, so I just thought, like, I'll give it a go for a year, and then I'll decide whether I think it's what it is. I can tell you now, after 6 months, none of these people on this thing are in the club's pocket whatsoever. They all just want the best for Everton, and there's no, they're not telling us what to do or what to say at all.
Yeah, I was going to make that point about Dave Kelly. It was one of the points I was going to make, was the, you know, the fact that he was in the Blue Union, he was in keeping Everton in our city, and as you say, he was on pretty much every club blacklist.
Pain in the arse. He's an absolute pain in the arse. He must be a nightmare to be. I'm so glad he's on our side, because I tell you, he must be he's so wily, he's so canny. Like, for example, Premier League dockers 10 points. So a week after, Dave Kelly puts up a tweet tagging in Barclays Bank and saying, "Barclays Bank, as a loyal customer of 20 years, I'm going to be closing my account with you because you are a supporter of the Premier League who have just docked us 10 points. I think it's unfair," yada, yada. He then leaves that. You get a load of Liverpool fans coming on, taking the piss, going, "Oh, Jesus, look at this, what a state. I'll open an account then. Oh, just know that." And it just goes thinking. Dave just literally turns off notifications, leaves it, comes back a few days later, 850,000 like views of it all around the world, and then he says to us, you know, if I ever get a Barclays Bank account, then I'll have to let them know, because I've never had one. And then he said, and the next one's going to be Budweiser, so I hope nobody realizes that I've been teetotal for 16 years, because he knows what to do. He knows what buttons to press with the activism side of things, you know, and how to press the right thing. So as I say, I'm really glad Dave's on our side with things, because he's a good bloke.
That's just classic. Yeah, it is unfortunate that you do have the naysayers, and unfortunately, as we saw with, you know, with that incident when Jazz went on Sky, It sums up the awkward balance that the Fab sometimes has to strike, which, as you said earlier, you know, it plays into this wariness and distrust that some fans have with the elected representatives, because, you know, the fan base was obviously angry at Mashiri, angry at the board, and people obviously wanted an indication that Jazz and the Fab were sort of sharing the fume. And he was obviously trying to express that he was satisfied with the dialogue that Fab was having with the board and the process of fan representation, you know, as a whole, and that framework. But everyone, of course, took it as endorsement of the board. And it's, I think, the strategy that you've taken is really wise, to kind of, you know, to sort of have this sort of broader picture. There are 11 of us here. It's not just a figurehead. And I think that, you know, the Jazz was unwittingly probably just, you know, kind of the lightning rod. But, you know, people need to remember that the change doesn't happen, you know, without someone sort of putting a flag in the ground and stepping up to put their head above the parapet. I mean, I remember going back to the Kirby days when I was involved in sort of pushing the case against the project and against Destination Kirby. I was losing sleep over the fact that the actions, however small or however great they were with the website, were actually having a material impact on the future of the club. And I walked around for days just, you know, feeling you feel vulnerable, you feel, but at the end of the day, you have to have the conviction that what you feel is right for the club. And thankfully, that's the way it turned out. And that is obviously, as you say, you're just 11 Evertonians trying to make a better club. And, you know, it'd be nice. You're always going to have your naysayers. You're always going to have people who just, you can't reason with them. But, you know, the more people that understand where you guys are coming from, that it's all coming from the heart, that you do have the club's best interests at heart, that you know, the better it will be.
Yeah, I think so. And as I say, we don't all agree on everything. You know, we do, you know, we have, you know, conversations about things and what we should say and what we shouldn't say and stuff like that. But I think the key thing to point out is, as I say, that everyone wants the same thing, but they might have different ideas about how to get there. You know, we all want a better club. And the thing is, as I say, It's back to that burning building again. You know, there's a lot wrong at Everton Football Club. There's an awful lot wrong at Everton Football Club. So it is, where do you start? And we've tried to do fan engagement to basically get a guide on that. You know, what is it that the fans want us to do? You know, what is it that's going to have a thing? Because it's, you know, the 11 of us might have a meeting and say, well, we think that we should focus on A, B, and C. Yeah, but we can't just assume that that's what is going to work, you know, with the fans, because A, B, and C, A might not be very visible. It might be behind the scenes, and it might be something that we can't necessarily talk about. So we've had discussions about that as well, and about things where, for me, I think that given where we're at, and given, as I say, what we've had in the naysay, that a lot of the stuff we need to be doing needs to be tangible and visible, and you've got something that you can point at to be able to say, yes, look, we've done that. All of the sort of structural sort of stuff and all the hierarchy stuff that we are doing all the time behind the scenes, that's the average fan in the street doesn't care about that. They don't care about us, you know, setting up the sort of stuff that we're doing in the backgrounds, about where we have our meetings on Teams and where we store stuff in and things like that. Because the thing is that the fan advisory board is going to be around for a while. So we can only do so much at the time. So if we have a meeting and someone comes up with something, I think we should do this, then we want to log that somewhere, so that it might be that we never get to do it, but it might be that in 2 or 3 years that's there for someone to come along and say, oh, that was a good idea. And we've now got a little bit of thingy for to pick that up and run with that and do that. But that needs to be captured and it needs to be held somewhere. So all that boring sort of stuff behind the scenes of getting all that in place. And that was what the first year, a lot of that was, because you're starting from scratch. So getting the website set up, getting all the email addresses set up, all of that admin side of things, to actually get a constitution in place, get an agreement with the club as to, you know, the commitment as to how many meetings they were going to have and things like that. All of that, you know, effectively dull stuff is all, you know, work that needs to be done by the, I don't know, 10 or 11 people in the Fab. It was 10 last year, 11 this year. So, but then from a fan's point of view, we need to be doing stuff that is visible and resonates with the fan base. So we've tried to do a few fan engagement sessions to find out what is important to them, because that's, you know, that's effectively what we'll live or die on, based on, you know, what the fans think of us, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
It sounds like a big demand of your time. Not you specifically, I mean, and all 11 of you guys involved. Like you say, I guess people don't really think about the admin, the website, and all them other things that come with it and the communications that you guys have to have. So I hope it doesn't feel thankless at times. I hope you feel like you're making a difference, because I think it's certainly appreciated by a lot of people.
It's a lot more. Well, put it this way: there's in every group, and this is not meant to be detrimental to anyone that's in the fab. There are some that are more involved than others. There are some that are, you know, by their lives, you know, they've only got X amount of time that they can contribute to things, stuff like that. I'm fortunate enough. I wouldn't have gone into this if I couldn't spend a decent amount of time on it. I used to work for a music festival, interviewing bands and doing podcasts and Twitch streaming for them and stuff like that. And that came to an end, and I needed another sort of project. And this sort of came along, and I thought, well, go on then, let's have a look at doing this. And I'm the sort of person and sort of personality that will throw myself into this. So yeah, I've spent a lot of hours doing this, but that doesn't necessarily mean I don't want to put anyone off from joining it in future, if you know what I mean. Everyone that's in the fab contributes to it in different ways. You've got some people that are talkers but don't necessarily have the, you know, the resources or the skills to actually, you know, to actually do some of the stuff that we need to do. My skills have sort of been mainly on, as I say, I'm like head of comms effectively, but I've never dealt with dealing with, you know, the press and putting out press releases or anything like that. I've never really been involved in stuff where meetings have an agenda and any other business and stuff like that. You know, I'm sort of saying, you know, I wanted to bring this up, and they're like, well, you should have said that in any other business. And I'm like, well, that was like the beginning of the meeting. I didn't know I wanted to say it at that point. How am I so all the protocol behind it is not something that I've been used to. So I've had to get up to speed on that a little bit. But I wanted very much to the website that we've got for the fab is it's got a lot of information on there, but it's a lot of text and a lot of pictures, and it's not really very exciting. So if people want to find out about the fab, I wanted us to start doing little video clips and doing like Twitter spaces, so you can hear our voices, you can see our faces, and you can find out that we are these 11 people. So that's one of the biggest changes that I wanted to do this year, and we've started to do that. But with that is obviously, as I say, there's a lot of work involved in it. So yeah, it's, you know, as I say, the headline is that we meet once a month, and they're the only actual things that we commit to doing, but there's just so much more of it. I mean, you look at this week, Dave Kelly went down to London on Monday, was invited down by the FSA to a meeting that they have, a regular meeting that they have with the Premier League. But because of obviously the 10 points, Everton was on the agenda. So he invited Dave as a fab, you know, the fab are a member of the FSA, and Dave individually is a member. So he was invited to go to that meeting. So Dave wanted to put it out there that we'd had that meeting on Monday. So we put a statement out there to say we've had a meeting and we'll update you, you know, give you more detail on it when we can. And everyone just comes back and says, tell us. And it's just like, yeah, okay, we will when we can. That's why we said we can't tell you anything yet. And then, you know, we've said that, we put that out, and then the FSA come back to us today and say, actually, you know, can you not say anything until the meetings have been agreed and gone out and stuff like that? So we're just like, all right, okay. So Dave's gone on Radio Merseyside tonight, and it's just basically just given a brief overview of his perception of it, but you can't give out any details on that. But everyone wants, you know, because of the world that we're in, everyone wants everything yesterday and everything now. And as I say, you've got to remember that I've got a 9-to-5 job. I work 9 a.m. to 5:30 every day in my day job. So I don't really get any time to do, you know, any fab stuff, lunch times and after work. But we've got WhatsApp conversation between the fab going on all day. So Dave messages me today at like 3 o'clock to say, I'm going on Radio Merseyside tonight. Can you put something out? And I'm like, well, I'm in a works meeting in 2 minutes and things like that. So, you know, that's what people have to realize. This is not a full-time job, but we are doing the best that we can, and we are trying to communicate with fans as best we can, you know, and that's a key thing for me, because I don't think there was enough of that last year. Not having a go at anyone in the fab, but just because they were so busy getting everything else up and going, up and running, that and there wasn't necessarily always something to tell the fans, but that was another thing I wanted to really, really focus on this year, was keeping the fans up to date with what we're doing.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, it's highly commendable. I think just to answer your earlier question, one of the biggest sort of changes that I've seen is this greater sort of exposure, this greater move on your part specifically to sort of put faces to names and just to get the message out there via these, you know, these short videos and your fan engagement sessions. I think it's a really good step. And, you know, I think it's one of these things that the longer it goes on, the more these kind of ideas will come. You know, I think just getting the fab off the ground last year was the key thing, you know. So anything that wasn't sort of dynamic enough about it last year, I think now you've got the feet under the table as an organization. You can really start sort of taking it forward.
Yeah, I've got a sort of an analogy that I always like to bring up whenever I talk on these things, which was the way I saw it was that for me personally as a fan, I think that Headlock Gate was probably the most scandalous thing that the club has ever done. I think it was horrific, and I think it put a massive, massive divide between the fans and the club, because they proper threw the fans under the bus, I think, and that angered me an awful lot. And when I mention about, you know, AGMs being lied to at AGMs and all of the rumours and all of the falsehoods that have come out over the years. But that for me was a real, real low point. So I always saw this sort of divide between the fans and the club. And I always sort of picture it as being like a river. So the fans are on one side of the river, the club's on the other. Now, we've got all these little fan groups that are going on with the fans forum, who are, you know, all of whom are represented on the FAB. So you've got the Disabled Supporters Association, you've got the Supporters Club committees, and we've got the Heritage Society, and they all have their own meetings with the club on a regular basis or whatever, but they are not mandated. So the club could stop them anytime they want. They just say, right, we're not meeting with the Heritage Society anymore. That's that. We're just not doing it anymore. There's nothing to enshrine that they've got to do that. The Fan Advisory Board, the Premier League have made the club do that, and the club have got to commit to engaging with the Fan Advisory Board. So that makes it different to me. So the image I've got in my head is that all of these other groups they're having their meetings with the club, but that is like literally, they both go out to a little rowing boat in the middle of the river, they have the meeting, and then they go back to their other sides. What the FAB's doing is building a bridge across the river, a permanent structure across the river. And last season, we were, you know, building the foundations of the bridge and starting to build that towards the club, and the club are doing their bits on their side. And at some point we're going to meet in the middle and we'll have the bridge that is permanently there to have this bridge between the club. And that will bring the fans and the club closer together. And the key thing for me was to say, what side of the river the FAB's on? We're on the fan side of the river. We're not on the club side of the river. You know, we are just made up of fans, and we're trying to build that bridge across. So if you think about that, for the first year, I think they were literally just sort of looking forward. We're building this bridge. We're looking towards the club, and we're doing that. And they weren't looking behind them at the fans to sort of say, this is what we're doing. So there wasn't enough of that. So that's what I wanted to get going this year, is that the rest of the FAB, I'm quite happy for them to sort of take that on and be moving forwards and carrying on building it. But I want to be making sure that we're communicating with the fans behind us and telling them what we're doing and bringing them on board and keeping them updated and showing them what value we have. And now, as I mentioned earlier, we've got other FABs that are getting in touch with us as well. So now we're starting to look sideways as well, because all these other FABs are trying to build their own bridges across the river, but they haven't even got started yet. So they're asking us, how did you build your foundations 18 months ago? How did you do this and how did you do that? So we've got all of these different directions that we're trying to do, and we've only got, you know, a finite amount of time. We obviously want to concentrate on Everton, but that's the analogy that I like to look at. This we're building this bridge, and it's going to take time, and we're probably not going to finish the bridge, but the 11 of us that are on it, but, you know, we're getting there, and I say we are starting to get into a really good place with the club. Obviously, I'm trying to make sure that we stay in their good books, because if the 777 thing comes off and we've got new owners, then I want them to be handing over and saying, these are the FAB, they're really useful and valuable, you should use them, rather than saying, these are the FAB, they're an absolute pain in the arse, don't listen to a word they say. You know, we want to try and make sure that we keep that, we want to show value, not be an irritant. So as I say, there's that fine line to walk sometimes. When the fan base is angry with the club, then we can be angry with them as well, but we've still got to engage with them. We've still got to try and make sure that we keep that dialogue going with them, and don't piss them off and make them be like, you know, that they don't want to have anything to do with us anymore, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we obviously have this potential change that's coming down the line, be it next month or maybe not at all. I mean, if things were to continue the way they were with the current regime, what's your sense of how much influence or how much you can actually get done with the club as it's currently constituted?
Yeah, it's difficult because obviously we had a very brief meeting with Don Dransfield of 777 when they first came in, and they did that sort of PR exercise really where they wanted to talk to a few of us, and Dave went and chatted to him at Finch Farm for a while. So it's obviously all very much up in the air at the moment. We don't know the way it's going to go, but we are neither for 777 or against 777 because we have to keep an open mind and we have to sort of see where it's going. And
right.
To a large extent, you know, we, as in fans, not just the FAB, we don't have a say in it. You know, the sale of those shares, that's already happened, by the way, September 17th, that's the sale has taken place. You know, the Mashiri sold everything in mid-September, and now it's just whether they're going to be allowed to actually take over or whether they've got to, you know, rewind it all again. So that's already happened. So we're just going along with it. And that's a private transaction. That's not anything to do with, you know, the board don't get a say in that or anything like that. That's just Mashiri decides to sell his shares, then that's it. He's selling his shares and he's out. So for me, and again, not speaking for the FAB, just speaking for me personally, I think that he's out. I think that Mashiri has decided that he hasn't got any more money. He doesn't want to put any more money into it. And that's that. And he's out. So for me, I'm the way I tend to look at things in life in general is that you either go one or two ways. But in most situations, you've got one or the other. So for me, if Mashiri stays and this all falls through, then we're stuck with, you know, a guy that doesn't want to put any more money into the club, and we still need to get that stadium built. I think the stadium would be at risk, again, personally, if this doesn't go through. I've obviously got massive, massive concerns about all the 7-7 noise. You know, there's a lot of worrying stories about them. But it is almost a frying pan fire situation. We're in a bad situation. You know, that's because of the decisions that have been made over the last 5-10 years. And that's where we're at, you know. So it's one of them, really. Is 7777 coming in a good thing? I don't know. But is Mashiri staying a bad thing? Probably is, just because of the situation that he's in and he's done with us. So, yeah, it's a worrying time for sure. But it's one of those things that, you know, that old saying about, you know, worry about the things you can control and don't worry about the things you can't. I don't think there's anything that we as fans or a FAB can do about it other than just try to stay engaged. We have assurances from the club and from 777 that as soon as they can, they will engage with us and they will try to answer as many of our questions as they can. You know, we had a specific, you know, fan engagement meeting about 777 where we got a list of questions to put to them, and they're still with them. You know, they've accepted those, and at some point we hope that we will be having that conversation. But, you know, we are as up in the air as everyone is. And I have to say, as up in the air as pretty much everyone that you know, at Everton that we meet with as well, because that it's you know, they don't know what's going on with that either, because it's all external to Everton. You know, it sounds mad that a takeover should be external to Everton, but for a large part it is.
So
we'll just have to wait and see what happens with it, really.
You mentioned sort of like resource quite a few times, or like limited resource of what you got, the 11 of you guys have. And apologies if this is a really sort of obvious answer to this. Is it as open as possible for any fans to get in touch? However wild a query or question might be, you're still very open and you're still given every capacity you have to answering and supporting all fan inquiries. So it's not, you know, No inquiries too silly, no questions too silly. You want people to get in touch. That's
yeah, absolutely. No, we absolutely do. So we have these. We've now been hosting these drop-in sessions, as you mentioned earlier. So we're doing a weekend home games. Midweek ones are more difficult to do, but weekend home games. We're in St. Luke's downstairs. We've got banners up, and we've got, you know, information that we can talk to people about. Any questions that they've got about the FAB, any questions that they've got for the club, we can't, you know, necessarily answer them, of course, right there and then. We might have a little bit more knowledge about some things than others, but it's mainly, you know, people coming and asking us you know, questions that they want us to do. And if we think it's, you know, we'll probably discuss it amongst ourselves, and then we take that forward to the club if we felt that was, you know, something that's, you know, that's worth asking, if you know what I mean. So the FAB email address, you know, is, you know, anyone can contact us on that. That's fab at efc-fanadvisoryboard.com. You know, you get on the Fab website and you can find any one of us on there. So we've all got our own email addresses for the Fab if you wanted to contact you know, myself about communications, if you wanted to contact, you know, the Women's Supporters Club or any aspect of the club that you want. If you go onto the Fab website, then it sort of signposts you as to what you want to talk about, and then that will come through to us, and then we can direct it to where it wants to go. But no, we absolutely want to hear from the fans. 100% we want to hear from the fans, definitely.
Brilliant. Well, thanks again, Pablo. It's great to have you on in both your capacity as an ordinary fan, like the rest of us, and as a representative of the Fan Advisory Board. I mean, as I said before, I think your efforts in opening up the communication channels with the fan base and providing these various opportunities for supporters to come and speak to FAB members in person, I think it's a great initiative. I wish you all the best in that role, providing that bridge, as you said, between the fans and the club's hierarchy, whoever that ends up being in the months to come. As Pablo said, if you want to reach out to him directly, you can find him at the efc-fanadvisoryboard.com website. You can find him on Twitter, which is at Squat on Address. The Fab's account is at efc_fanadvisory. And as I say, you can find all the other members on their website. So again, a thanks to Pablo, to everyone for listening. Until next time, up the toffees.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.